Thanks, Mr. Rob Kirken, and Copyright Contracting Talent and Rights Negotiation Group, BBC. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thanks to WIPO for giving me the opportunity to set out some brief views from a BBC perspective. Our overall theme is facilitating access to culture in the digital age. And the BBC believes that a copyright system fit for the digital world would balance strong copyright protection with straightforward licensing of all types of copyright material, not only music, and that the competition rules should support this balanced approach. We understand the need for strong copyright protection because the BBC is a major rights holder and creator of intellectual property itself. £2.3 billion per annum is spent by the organisation on producing, commissioning, or acquiring original content. Creativity is therefore the lifeblood of an organisation like mine, and the scale of this investment illustrates the importance of copyright in incentivising and protecting creativity. Based on our experience as a major user and licensee of rights, we also believe it is vital to have copyright rules which promote efficient and cost-effective licensing so that the creative and cultural work we invest in can be easily disseminated. For a modern broadcasting organisation like the BBC, there are two key drivers in the digital age for seeking copyright licensing rules which balance strong rights with easy access. The first is audience expectation. In the digital age, broadcasters provide many more audio and audiovisual services than previously and seek to provide them on all digital platforms and device types. Universal access of this kind, however, meets only the basic level of expectation for modern audiences, who also expect broadcast content to be made available anytime, any place, anywhere. And particularly of a public service broadcaster like the BBC, have a legitimate expectation that past archive content will be available as well as current output. The second driver is piracy. If audience expectation cannot be met, a commercial opportunity is effectively created for illegal operators whose activities jeopardise the cultural and economic well-being of all our industries. I will give some brief examples from our practical experiences of where the present rules mean rights licensing has to be carried out in a way that makes it more difficult than necessary to meet audience needs and incurs substantial inefficiency costs. I'd like to suggest some adjustments to the rules and try to take the competition aspects into account. Firstly, the present rules for managing rights clearances result in inefficiencies and are not fully effective because they do not reflect the multi-territory and platform and technology-neutral basis on which broadcasters need to provide audio and audiovisual media services. For example, BBC iPlayer was launched at the end of 2007. This service provides multi-platform simul streams of BBC output and a streamed on-demand catch-up service of recent programmes. It now attracts around 100 million stream requests a month and therefore comes second in the UK to Google YouTube in terms of requests for an on-demand audiovisual service. Now, the next bit is etched on my heart because the negotiations for the rights agreements for the BBC to run iPlayer took 5 years, and they required reaching 70 new agreements with rights holders. And this degree of complexity results from three factors. A, the complex aggregation of copyright interests, particularly in audiovisual material. B, the requirement to separately acquire from rights holders both reproduction and communication to the public rights, and C, the separation of communication to the public rights into broadcasting and making available. Finally, because it is funded by the UK licence fee, iPlayer is directed and limited to UK audiences. To make it available on a multi-territory basis would add another layer of complexity to this matrix. Secondly, as things stand, there will be substantial rights clearance difficulties in making available the BBC's programme archive. We have recent experience of making just 1,000 hours of archive programmes available online for streaming for just a six-month period. 6,500 person hours were spent checking this material for rights implications and subsequently obtaining permission for this use from about 300 individual or collective rights holders. The BBC Television Archive contains about 400,000 hours of programmes, and the programme archives of the members of the European Broadcasting Union, Europe's public service broadcasters, contain many, many millions more. We estimate that clearing the entire BBC archive would require 800 staff working for 3 years at a total cost of £70 million. And in that process, a proportion of archive programmes would prove to be unclearable because copyright works included in them had become orphaned. As an inefficiency cost, particularly in conjunction with the essential costs of digitising and distributing archives, this could result in a substantial shortfall in the realisation of both public and commercial value from facilitating access to broadcasters' archives as a cultural resource. So the main conclusions of the BBC and Europe's other public service broadcasters, based on experiences of this kind, in terms of necessary adjustments to the rules governing copyright clearance arrangements, fall into two broad categories. A, building on the principles established in the regulatory sphere in the EU's Audiovisual Media Services Directive, technology-neutral, multi-territory licensing for online audiovisual media services would be facilitated by extending the so-called country of origin rule on a technologically neutral basis to all initial communications to the public of services like iPlayer. Licensing of audiovisual media communications to the public should incorporate the making of incidental reproductions, technical copies, to reflect the practical reality of broadcasting today. These measures would enable a single rights clearance to suffice for the use of programme contributions across all platforms. Secondly, the revised rules should promote, in our view, the adoption of extended collective licensing schemes, where these can be shown to be the most practicable means for clearing rights for audiovisual media services, including the making available of programmes in on-demand services. And in the EU, there should be a binding obligation for member states to ensure, for example, through extended collective licensing, coupled with arrangements to deal with orphan works, that the broadcasters can clear their archives for use in new online services. This would create certainty of use, efficient rights clearance mechanisms, and a basis for the fair remuneration of rights holders. So the two final points to consider are these. Whether the above policy proposals would equally apply to the licensing of music rights as well as other copyright material, and would the approach conflict with the rules on competition? The BBC's current licensing arrangements for music already conform on the basis of voluntary collective licences with many of the policy objectives I've set out. In some respects, the issue is being able to replicate the efficiency of those models for the other 15 or so categories of major rights holders whose material makes up audiovisual works. The one aspect in which the current music licensing arrangements do not conform is, of course, in terms of being able to readily obtain clearances for multi-territory use. This is a necessary improvement to the current rules, but in our view, should not be at the expense of being able to clear rights in the worldwide repertoire for agreed uses via a single collective rights manager. The wider application of collective licensing models advocated here does raise legitimate competition aspects. Individual rights holders and creators would need to have trust and confidence in the collective rights managers, and that would need independent oversight. In addition, the concentration of rights in a single entity should be balanced by access to a price arbitration mechanism for users and licensees, something like the Copyright Tribunal in the United Kingdom, as well as an arbitrator on value for rights holders who can only seek compensation from the collective rights manager under extended collective licensing schemes. For example, a function of the Copyright License Tribunal in Denmark. So to conclude, I have put the BBC's views on copyright licensing into the context of the importance to the BBC of creativity. Equally critical is the changing expectations of audiences in response to digital technology and the threat from piracy if those expectations cannot be met legitimately. I have said that aspects of the copyright licensing system are rooted in historical practices which do not best serve contemporary needs. The BBC will work in collaboration with our creator stakeholders to increase the level of certainty over our ability to use the rights in BBC content and to substantially simplify current rights administration complexity on a fair basis. However, we do think, in relation to some of the intractable problems of individual rights holder clearances, that legal changes to support simplification of the rules and the effective collective management of rights should be part of the future landscape. In this context, competition between collective rights managers would be desirable, provided it is consistent with establishing the most efficient clearance systems. Thank you.